Hey everyone, it's 7:30 p.m. We're here in the Classroom Studio in Arlington, Virginia. I'm sitting here in the studio with David Miller, one of our co-instructors. Hey David, you there?
How you doing, Michael? Great to be on with you tonight with everybody around the world. Like Michael said, it's 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the United States of America. We've got a great show lined up for you, so we're going to let Michael get right into it. Hit it, Michael.
Great. A couple of notes before we begin tonight. This is the third week of the course. We've had a lot of great speakers so far, some great presentations, a lot of great readings. To date, we've had almost 2,000 people listen in these conversations. We've had hundreds of assignments on our social learning platform, Bognito. We've been really impressed by the amount of people posting their 100-word concept papers for the new venture they're going to create and the feedback they're getting. We've also had dozens of people meet around the world from Shanghai to Boston to New York the past few weeks to sit down in person and discuss their ventures. We also have some upcoming exciting speakers beyond tonight. We just scheduled the CEO of Samasource, one of my favorite social entrepreneurs. She works a lot in Pakistan. She'll be in July. We also have the incoming president of George Mason University will be speaking to us. So we have a lot going on, and we're really excited. One quick note about tonight. After our discussion with Mark and Frank, Ashoka is actually Ashoka on Twitter. Ashoka's main handle is going to host a post-discussion Q&A with all the students and the instructors and our guests if they can stick around.
And so, Michael, is that just at Ashoka?
Yep, that's at
Excellent.
Ashoka.
So everybody out there, make sure you are following at Ashoka on Twitter so you will be able to engage in that discussion at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
Right now, we're really excited for tonight. We have Mark and Frank on the line from Seattle. Mark and Frank, you guys there?
Yeah, we're here, guys. Hey, guys. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we're really excited. This past week, the students started reading a little bit into Lean Startup, and you know, they're starting to understand Lean Startup methodology. And it actually saw some of your videos, too, guys. And Mark and Frank are the co-founders of Startup Weekend. And instead of, to do the best justice, I'm going to ask them in one or two sentences just to describe what Startup Weekend is. And from there, they're going to take on and they're going to give a presentation that we'll talk about in just a minute. Mark, what is Startup Weekend in one or two sentences?
In one or two sentences, Startup Weekend is the first place you go when you have an idea in your local community. And that's something we're making sure is accessible around the world right now. And what we provide is really the experiential education, learning how to find the right people and validate the ideas and take the first steps to actually launching a company, no matter what it is.
Awesome, awesome. Tonight, Mark and Frank are actually going to talk, and they're going to use a presentation to guide their talk. I just tweeted out a link to their presentation. If people see that link, at Ashoka U Online, let's retweet that a couple of times so everybody can get this link. It's on slideshare.net. And once you join us in just a minute or two, yeah, I see some people coming in now. We're going to let Mark and Frank take it away. Why don't you guys do a short introduction to yourselves and go ahead and get started.
Perfect. Mark here, so everybody can get used to my voice here. I know we'll be switching back and forth between Frank and myself. I'm the guy without the French accent. I am from the U.S., also a Swiss citizen, though. I have a background in engineering, 3D animation, international business, and have been doing Startup Weekend for about 3 years now. I'm currently the CEO, and like we said, one of the guys that co-founded it with me is Frank here. Go ahead, Frank.
Yep. Hey, guys. So it's going to be easy to recognize me because of my French accent. I come from Paris. Mark, in 3 years, I've been working at Startup Weekend. My background is in computer science engineering and business. Happy to talk with you guys if you have any questions. Can't wait to answer them.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, just to keep this in mind, We also have, if you have any questions, feel free to tweet directly at myself. I've got the Twitter stream up, and if you have any questions throughout the presentation, feel free to shoot them directly towards us, and we'll try to get to them, assuming we have time here. My Twitter handle is just Mark Nogger. That's Mark Nogger, M-A-R-C-N-A-G-E-R. And perfect. So we put together a little bit of a slideshow on slideshare.net, and hopefully everybody's pulling that up right now. It's more or less just a guideline, and hopefully visualize a little bit of what we're going to be talking through here. Hopefully I saw that it was in the required readings or, I guess, videos to read a couple books this week, as well as watch a video of what is Startup Weekend. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the why and some of the philosophy behind it, as opposed to getting into, you know, what the actual 54-hour event is. So, perfect. I'm going to go ahead and dive right in here to the slides. If everybody wants to go to slide number 2, we'll give cues along the way here as we're changing slides. But more or less, why are we doing Startup Weekend? Taking a step back, we kind of can look at the world in a very, I guess, cynical or optimistic way. You know, it's kind of troublesome time here. Nobody can deny that. National debt, jobless rates, economic downfalls, you know, alarming rate of people coming out of college underemployed. It's a little bit scary right now for especially our generation, understanding what are the options right now and where are we going as society. One of the biggest things that we've been able to understand in the last couple of years, thanks to firms like the Kauffman Foundation, is the importance of startups and understanding that all of the actual job creation is coming from firms less than 5 years old. So emphasizing the actual importance of what we're doing and startups themselves. So knowing that if all of the jobs are coming from startups and young companies, that obviously our goals altogether are going to be as startups as possible.
Mm-hmm. I think going back maybe to what we're all trying to do here, like including Startup Again, including Lean, including you guys, is the big challenge is there's a way to produce as a society better entrepreneurs. There's a way for us to perform and to help people to go from the idea stage to building a team to execute in a better way. And so that's why we're doing that. And if you're going to the next slide, put a graph together, and basically it's what you see is chaos on the left. Who cares? And we're gonna go fast on this one. But roughly on the left side, you see where we are. Tons of people like you trying to create a business, and on the right side, you'll be able to see like these rock stars. And these rock stars, we all know them. They're Facebooks, they're HP, they're Microsoft, they're Google. And everybody look at them. And everybody wants to know about the rock stars, and nobody really cares about the people who are just at ground zero. And that creates an ripple on the economy. Countries tend to focus on big companies. They tend to focus on things that influence their GDP, the level of unemployment, the inflation. Schools, well, like if you look at what's an MBA, actually it's a Master in Business Administration. It's here to be able to work for these big companies. The education could start producing more and more people to work for these big companies. In the United States, Mark mentioned the impact of the crisis. Actually, it's a measurable impact. In the past 40 years, and that's a statistic from Kauffman, on average, the United States created something like 600,000 startups a year. Since 2009, this number dropped to 500,000 startups. So actually, interesting enough, we're producing less and less of these companies. Even though these companies have a huge impact, nobody really cares about. And prior to that, and that's where we're going to be digging, we don't know anything about. Anything we know starts when the company is incorporated.
Frank, can I ask a quick question there? Do we know, does Kauffman know why the number has dropped from 600,000 to 500,000?
No.
We don't know.
We need to see, you know, we need more data. This thing takes time.
Absolutely.
But
the one thing that they have been able to prove is that the number is dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of this phenomenon that they don't really understand because, you know, we hear startups, it seems like more of a trend that is picking up steam in at least the mainstream, right? But in terms of actual entrepreneurial risk-taking and new firm creation, that number's gone down. And one of the other interesting things is that the actual average number of jobs that every single startup creates has gone down dramatically, too. I think there's a number of...
It went between from 7 on average to 5.
Okay, so really, really a double whammy. Fewer startups, fewer jobs from those startups.
And one of the things they were advocating for was the Jobs Act, actually, and you can dig into that. But as a society, you want to address this issue and being like, how can we actually produce better entrepreneurs and more of them? Because obviously, if we want to sustain the economy, we're gonna start to have a big issue in a couple of years if we don't try to correct that tendency.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark, Frank, I got a question for you guys too. Yeah, I really appreciate the stats from Kauffman Foundation, but why do you guys personally care?
Yeah,
what does this have to do with y'all?
That's a great thing. I think one thing that we personally have been on, we've both been in how we got involved with this in the first place, entrepreneurs ourselves. I don't think we ever called, self-identified as entrepreneurs before we kind of got deeper into Startup Weekend and realized that, yes, this was a startup, our startup. And one thing that we really firmly believe more than anything else is that the best way to lead a fulfilling life is the kind of the notion of working for yourself and solving real problems. I think that's what interests a lot of people and incentivizes people to get into it in the first place. But, if we can kind of break that down and understand that and start to agree that, yes, one of the best ways to lead a fulfilling life is to be solving real problems with real people.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about our impact on society if we start to extrapolate that through entrepreneurship. We really believe that entrepreneurs, definition being people that are solving real problems, therefore leading more fulfilling lives, entrepreneurship is one of the biggest paths to leading a fulfilling life. And as Startup Weekend started to grow, we really started, to realize the impact that had on communities and cultures and start to transform things and really catalyze a lot of conversations that were a lot more supportive of, innovation and creativity.
Yeah. As for me, I think, going back to the roots of it, like I'm following passion. The world becomes enough. Awfully boring place, I think, like a couple of years ago when you look like you don't want to end up working in a big company that's going to collapse in 10 years, wasting your life working for a company. So I guess I was like, I'm just going to try to address this issue being like, can I build myself my own dream job? And what do I love? And truly, I never really joined Startup Weekend. I think I joined more of my Mark and Clint, who was your other co-founder, and were like, let's do these things we love. Like, let's meet these amazing people. And really, like, just meeting more and more people, realizing the impact we have on people, it's not work. It's life. Like, this is, we want more and more people to do that, And I think there's a reason why more and more people get interested in entrepreneurship lately. And one of them is because the deal, which is you get a job and you get a salary, it's starting to become less and less of a good deal because you get less and less money, and also the task you're going to be doing for the rest of your life are not really challenging. So, it's just following very selfishly my own passion and trying to do the thing. But then that goes well with what we want to say, and that goes well with Lean, that goes well with everything. Whatever you choose, whatever the thing which is going to inspire you, and when you look at this graph, there's different steps, and we're going to go there. Whatever the first step is, things evolve after. And I think the talk we give you now is this evolution. So we started for one reason, and then we realized, holy hell, like we see this big mission we can achieve, and why not to do, if you have a choice between doing something small or something big, we're going to go for the home run, and we're going to try to have as much of an impact as we can. And so we're still learning every day. Everybody here, I think, is learning. And so what we started with and what we started to talk about to you guys have definitely evolved. And, you never know. It's hard to predict where we're going for anyone.
I think on slide number three here before we move ahead is, you know, just to clarify that, it's a perfect segue from Frank's point, though, is you know, on the right side of the graph is kind of what we know and understand about businesses, that there's kind of that 0-1 phase. Zero being really on the left and one being on the right. The one is when what we understand about entrepreneurship and new firm creation, and that really starts the day that we have an EIN, a tax ID, and we can actually track companies. What happens before that? Where do entrepreneurs come from? How do people get inspired and you know, actually start to test ideas and become better entrepreneurs, more likely to succeed? That's really where Startup Weekend's sitting, and you know, we have an incredibly unique perspective window into that, you know, those questions when we look at having data on over 50,000 people that have gone through that just this year and almost 100 to date.
Mm-hmm. And to be true, these questions, none of these are new. These are very old questions. You guys are smart people, all of you guys like listening here, and you must all be familiar with Schumpeter. This is a very old debate, and this is a very fascinating debate about, like, how do you connect the entrepreneurial world to the economic world? And it's exciting to know that we might be able to help on that. So yeah, if you're going on slide number four now, like, we kind of put the same graph through another perspective, which is the entrepreneurial, we call that the entrepreneur story. And that's the story of an entrepreneur, of actually of high growth entrepreneurs. It goes from being inspired, discover his environment, discover the knowledge he needs to achieve. Like, that's a very general model, right?
You go through this phase. You're inspired. You're inspired at one point where you know, it might be your father, your teacher. One day you kind of say, "Hey, you know, entrepreneurship or working for myself, that sounds pretty cool. I'm going to check that out." Discovery is really the phase where you go through and you start to realize, "Hey, I'm not crazy. There's other people that are thinking about this too." You know, kind of the whole finding your tribe discovery phase, and then the next phase is really where Startup Weekend is at its core, but the action phase. There's a big difference between talking about your ideas and starting to do something about them. And Startup Weekend is really the place where you can come and take those first steps beyond where we're working, the startup phase. So something more like the accelerators that exist today. But when you think you have a team, you think you have an idea, coming together to figure out if you can find that business model. And beyond that, obviously, once you do find a business model, you're ready to scale. So it's scale phase, you know, going from a localized operation to, you know, potentially a global one. And then our penultimate goal is hopefully to see a couple billion-dollar companies come out of this, because, you know, the impact that we know that has on society as a whole, and, you know, that breeds the ultimate success in terms of being an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm.
Excellent, and this is a really nice slide. I think you guys have nailed it with that key component where you are the action step. But that first two steps, inspire, celebrate, and discovery, is that the same all around the world? And I ask that because here at George Mason, we do some research on global entrepreneurship, and it's different in different places, as you all know. Frank, you said you're French from Paris. I think Mark is from, you said you're American, but Swiss national as well. So you guys have a lot of global experience. I also, just looking at your site, I mean, I noticed you guys were in Cambodia with a Startup Weekend. And as someone with a Southeast Asian studies minor, as minor grad, Cambodia is the killing field, not entrepreneurship. So can you talk about maybe a little bit those first two steps before they get to you, the inspire and celebrate and discovery that leads the action? How do you guys see that? Globally, what are the challenges when you go in somewhere where maybe inspire, celebrate, and discovery are not like they are in the U.S. or New Zealand or China or some places?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just before, like, going into that, what I'd like to say is usually when we introduce this model, what I'd like to use is a quote from a teacher in economics who used to say that every models are wrong, some are useful. So we really did build this model into trying to make something useful. And the big thing about this model that we love is we take the point of view of the entrepreneur. Not to go to answer your question, my Mark will jump on that, but my guess right now is when we go there, we don't see any difference, truly.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the most phenomenal learning experiences. You know, obviously it's mostly anecdotal just by flying around the world and doing this, especially for the first couple of years when we were launching, getting Startup Weekend up and running. But, you know, I've been in outdoor venues in Mongolia, and, you know, we're having events in sub-Saharan Africa now. And, you know, you go cross-culturally.
Yeah.
There's this notion of just learning that you can, you know, the inspiring is one in of itself to know that you could actually do something. I think that's a world, you know, a commonality throughout anybody that might consider entrepreneurship or look back and understand where they came from. But the discovery phase is kind of learning to actually talk about it and share your ideas. A lot of societies and cultures don't permit that, and it's not something standard. But, you know, I think there are groups, especially with the internet, the age of the internet, the ability to share and read and understand that there are ideas and that you can share them and that this is, you know, a good thing that's universal. It's becoming more.
Yeah, there may be some cultural differences, but the if you think about it, like entrepreneurship or business is something which takes its roots in Mesopotamia 5,000 years ago. It's very old, and it's spread all around the world in a way that is universal. Like everybody has somewhere in most of the country, I guess, like maybe not North Korea, but everybody has, you know, businesses and everybody has money and everybody knows how to use it. Now, what's interesting, and to go further, like, how do we really observe that? And can we build any research based on that? That's always interesting, too. And we're actually opening a research department at the start of weekend. But these kind of questions are very tough to answer on a research and a study point of view, because you need to have different data sets from different countries that you want to compare. And that's very difficult, and there's very few of them, if you guys are familiar with that. And actually, this kind of question, that's where also it's exciting. We have Startup Weekend, and we'll present that after, but in roughly more than 100 countries. So we're going to be able to measure that. We're going to be able to see, do we observe actually differences between the way people get inspired or people like discover their own environment or discover anything. So right now we don't have the answers. We have synthesis, and hypothesis would be there's no strong differences between all these different countries. But now we actually, if we want to push the hypothesis and to measure it and test it, then that's something we'll be able to do too, which is exciting.
How many countries did you say Startup Weekend is in?
You can go on slide number 6. We're on 103 countries.
Wow.
So, yeah, I guess before we jump ahead too far, we're kind of covering a little bit here as we talk, which is great. On slide number 5, though, you can kind of see where we position Startup Weekend. You know, it really is more concretely, especially in the developed nations. I think this goes to your question in the action phase, but in a lot of the developing nations, we're seeing it more in that inspire and discovery. We're catching people at that first glimpse, that first, you know, sparkle in their eye.
Yeah.
And you know, providing them some tool sets.
It goes very fast. I remember like 2 years ago, we had a startup again in Chile, and the people didn't know what was a startup there. So they were like applying for make restaurants and things like that. And now like, all of them are strongly familiar with Lean, with business model generation. Key Blank was at the first one. And so, there is differences at first, but the vocabulary, the common grammar that everybody uses around entrepreneurship around the world starts to be amazingly consistent through all the country we're running through.
Happened very quickly.
And do you think those countries and the leadership, and Chile has done, I think, a great job. They've got Startup Chile and some funds available. Do you think they came to the same realization that you two came to a few years ago, that the old system with large corporations and seemingly lifetime employment going away, budget deficits, do you think they came around to you guys and in terms of their thinking, and that's why you were able to see such a difference in just a couple of years?
Well, first of all, I mean, we've got nothing against big corporations, quite the opposite. We want everyone the fact they're challenged by smaller ones, like all the creative destruction that came from all these startups is
where innovation comes from.
I think right now, like, most of the countries face the issue of creating value. And they will come to the same conclusion that they do need entrepreneurs to do it. If they don't have startups, if they don't have a very active and alive tissue of people taking risks and trying to create these businesses, they're going to end up with very old industries. And like little by little, like they, that's the only way you can create, you know, better the growth in your GDP or in your unemployment is by having these performing companies. So they know that. They know that already. It's, I think the challenge is what solution do you have and how can you make something better about it? And that's where we're trying to bring a solution. But it's, yeah, it's an hypothesis we have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to dive in here a little bit more, I guess looking at slide number 5 here, Frank had earlier mentioned you can see MBA. One of the things that we really talk about is the traditional education system and is generally geared at more workforce development. You know, just in the name, Master in Business Administration. So you know, we kind of position ourselves as kind of redefining education, being part of like that unofficial master in business creation, if there were such a thing. Right? Starting to have those conversations, and I think you know, groups and having classes like yours are you know, very much a big part of this movement. To talk more specifically to the topic of lean, which I know this session is geared around a little bit more. You know, I think how we really view lean is as a methodology, something that can be really useful. One of the things that we kind of caution ourselves with and our community with generally is understanding when is lean going to be really useful and, you know, what purpose does it play? I think, you know, understanding, yeah, when to use it and when to implement it and understanding that it's not really the starting point necessarily because there's a lot of things that are a lot more important than just adopting and understanding methodologies. And I think that's something that we really emphasize at a Startup Weekend, that one of the most important things is building a team. Your team matters so much more in the early stages than the actual idea that you're working on. Knowing that you have somebody who's, you know, aligned interests, that, you know, being able to ask and have the same answers to questions such as, you know, are you here to save the world or make $1 million? Is your spouse supportive? When are you going to call this a full-time job? I think Noam Wasserman's done an incredible job in his book, The Founder's Dilemma, to point out a lot of those statistics. And the one that we see most anecdotally time and time again is that his statistic is 65% of founders and startups actually fail due to team and people issues. So if that's 65% of it, you know, that's to do with the humans coming together at some point, I think that's the biggest single slice of the pie that is kind of not being addressed at this point. And it's not even relevant to and implement methodologies until we kind of tackle that biggest piece of the pie. So, but that being said, you know, lean is certainly one of those that has been one of the most useful today. And Frank wanted to dive in a little bit and kind of talk about how we utilize it and you know, the theory within Startup Weekend.
Yeah, I mean, like, everybody saw the video, and I think two things I'd like to say. First of all, maybe most of you didn't know that, but I remember when I was in a business school, like something like 5-7 years ago, you have to understand that these discussions about trying to learn about entrepreneurship are quite new. Even still now, like a lot of schools still talk about business plan, but which is great. I mean, business plan is very useful when you work in something that is highly predictable. To try to open up on a business plan is going to be a great place to a great tool to use. I think the motto or one of the things we think about at Startup Weekend is every time we're going to see something new, a new methodology, a new tool, we're going to be giving that information to our attendees. But as long as the tool didn't demonstrate through statistics that it's actually performing better than, you know, without that tool, we're not going to be advocating for it. I don't know if that makes sense, but right now, lean, I think, is a great tool. And you can go wrong if you look the same with customer development. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, try to make a good product, try not to waste people's time, try to be sure that the thing you're producing is actually has customers. Be careful with your customers and try to have a good team. I mean, we're still like ground zero of trying to understand what's actually the stage of entrepreneurship. And our focus right now is also to just help the people to form a team. Because you can be as lean as you want, but if you don't know how to code, for example, and you want to build something, you're gonna be facing some issues. Or if you're a terrible business person and you can't sell a product, even if you know exactly who your customer is gonna be, it's not gonna help you. If you try to be innovative, Ford had this great quote saying like if you would have asked his customers about what they would have wanted, they would have said they wanted faster horses instead of cars.
Well, absolutely.
What I mean is, and we'll dig into that later, but this is an awfully complex world. And as much as people want to, everybody wants to have an easy solution. Like, what's the what are the three easy ways to become a successful entrepreneur? Or how can I learn to play Mozart in one day? Whatever. How can I be a great coder? How can I develop this thing really fast without using any money? Everybody would love to have an answer to this. And Eric, like, actually, I think sometimes is misunderstood. Like, he doesn't say this is a universal answer. But it's good to try to have a methodology. We're in the 21st century. We should try to be smarter about trying to create this business. And we can't go wrong trying to do a better job at that. And I think the reason, one of the questions I keep asking myself is why is Startup Weekend working now? Like why lean is something we're talking about right now? Like why are we talking about customer development now? Like where the people 70 years ago were idiots, or did something change? And I think there's a couple of things that changed that allow these new way of learning and maybe teaching entrepreneurship. And one of them is time. The time it takes to build a business. Now, like you can just open a web page, and I'm talking about high growth startups that are based on programs or on computers. You can create something really, really fast. In a weekend, ultimately, that's what we see. Like in one weekend, you can create a team, you can create a product, you can pitch it, you can see if you have people joining you, the team can explode. Before, like maybe it would take a year for you if you wanted to create a real-world company to get to the same result. So ultimately, in 1 year, you've got 52 weekends. So you should have the equivalent of 52 years of experience. someone tried to make this iteration 52 times in 1 year. And the second one, I think, is social networks. Entrepreneurs used to be alone or didn't know, like maybe using their own school networks. That's one of our hypotheses. Now you're not going to be alone. You're an entrepreneur and you want to meet with our entrepreneurs. And these are not bad. These are things that are very structural. And you don't want to go back in time now. You want to meet other entrepreneurs. You want to know who else is working in these things. And you want to structure your ecosystem towards that. So going to the next slide, maybe Mark can present where we are right now with Startup Weekend in terms of volume and where we're going.
Sure, I think we'll come back to that a little bit deeper too. Just in terms of, I think on slide six, everybody can kind of read our statistics. This year alone, we're shooting for at least 500 events in over 100 countries, and that trend. One of the interesting things where we're at, we're seeing demand for about 2,000 events, so it's kind of a race to keep up with those. So there's a couple other philosophies that we've really developed and like to talk about, and it's all related to the bigger conversations around lead and startup and entrepreneurship and everything else. But actually defining what a startup is, this is kind of pulling together a little bit of what we've been going over. But understanding, we've got this little equation here, but idea times team squared. So it's really emphasizing the importance of the individuals, the entrepreneurs themselves, coming together, forming a cohesive team, and having an idea that is valid and solving a real problem, creating real value. So often people throw around the terms entrepreneurship and startup pretty loosely these days. So we always try to start with defining what is an actual startup, and I think we want to challenge everybody to challenge themselves and everybody else when we bring them about. But I think the biggest way to look and see is that a real startup is to measure the level of action.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, just just as a disclosure, we have Steve Lank in our board of directors, so we totally agree, I think, with his definition, which makes sense, of a startup being an entity trying to scale and to sustain a business model. What we try to emphasize here is just to say that the team is really what's going to make the difference at the early stage. Actually, if you want to be lean, you need people to be highly performant in what they do. Interesting enough, I think that once you scale and sustain your business model, when you want to scale the company and when you want to actually becoming a high-growth venture, I think the equation reversed a little bit. As the strategy, as the things you're choosing, like the direction of the company you want to take to is actually more important than the people. Like, it's easy to see if you fire one guy at Microsoft, Microsoft's not going to collapse the next day, right? But if Microsoft decide to launch something that doesn't make sense, that's going to have a huge impact on them. For a startup, it's quite the opposite. You can have as many dreams as you want, as many ideas as you want at the early stage. Most of them, anyway, will be wrong, as actually Lean is trying to address, like, these unknown unknown. But if it sucks, like, you're never going to achieve anything. So that's why we're really focusing on this action step. Like, how can we make the best team possible? And that's a very interesting domain too. If you look at a startup again with 100 people, and if you take an average of team of 4 or 5, that's more than like 170,000 combinations of teams possible. How do you know you've got the right one? These things are very, very interesting to study. And
Would you guys mind going a little deeper? Because you mentioned that is a crucial component, the team, Team Squared, and all the different combinations. But when you invite people in to sign up, you do have different categories, right, skill sets at least that you put forward. Would you mind talking about that, the diversity of a team and how what you found in your experience about how important that is?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the biggest things Frank mentioned, you know, the hundreds of thousands of possible combinations when you have a room full of 100 people. But that really in their lives is the, you know, critical element of success and critical ingredient is being able to bring together people with different backgrounds. So we're doing that a lot just at a general startup weekend. And I think that is what really differentiates us from a hackathon, right, is we have different skill sets, different people coming together, and we're actually starting to develop that further and bring those into different industries. So introducing, for example, our government event we held in D.C. last weekend had a bunch of government officials, about 25% of the people in the room participating. We're actually helping defining the problems and products that were servicing the industry and the government as a customer. So we're developing that even further. So maximizing the serendipity that actually is allowed to take place.
Yeah. Actually, if you want, we can jump on slide number 9, which will maybe answer your question about why we see that. Is we're living in a world with more and more information right now, and I think theoretically the amount of information you can digest as an individual kind of, I think, saturated in the 19th century. I think the amount of information that we had at that time, that the writing and everything that went there, like, what, sorry?
The encyclopedia.
Yeah, exactly.
That was pretty much the knowledge. Right?
That was as much as someone can take. And I think in the 20th century, the university is the one who's kind of owning this knowledge. And now we've passed a very interesting phase where everything is, I think, the information produced in a week. I can't remember. I have to find the statistics, but don't take me, don't quote me on this one. But something like, I think what we produce in 1 week is more than what we produced the past 10 years, something like that. It's terrifying. And university can keep it up with it. Like right now, the curriculum you have in university is already defaced to the actual amount of information we have there. So going back to your initial question, what is an entrepreneur? Is actually someone who disrupts and who's being able to disrupt and innovate and create a business. And this innovation happens by combining different things. As Mark said, like what we try to do is to maximize serendipity. And right now, that's actually interesting enough. I think it's the only way you can create something new is by mixing together, because one individual can't own all this knowledge. And so that's why we try to combine these different people. So we segmented that into business people, developers, and designers, because that's the obvious with most of the startups we see who are mostly around websites right now. or iPhone apps, like you need a developer, you need a designer. Designers are actually highly important people, and a good business person. But we don't pre-match them. After that, the way it works is kind of, if you pitch your idea, if you're good at pitching your idea, if you're a good leader, you're gonna form a team. If your idea was bad, or if you're not a good leader, your team will not be formed. So we don't try to automate that. We wanna keep this selection process to be as natural as possible. Until we observe a pattern that we know for sure that we can demonstrate, and in that case, we'll evolve the current process. Did that answer what you guys were asking? Sorry.
No, absolutely. And is that data out yet? Have you found that people are naturally, developers are attracted to each other, or designers seem to work together? And as a business person, I get the idea that the business guys may be left out alone. But have you, you talked about all the data you have. Have you noticed any trends emerge yet from the data into how these people form their teams?
Yeah, I've got a couple different things there. Number one, the diversity matters on teams. That's probably one of the biggest learning for, I think specifically developers tend to really congregate and, form their little niche within any event. Generally, for a first-time event, you'll see a high concentration of the similar skill sets kind of grouping together. It's more like the eighth-grade dance, right?
Right.
Everybody's on opposite sides kind of looking at each other and wondering if they should go talk to one another. And at the end of the day, what you'll see is that all the business people work together and all the developers work together. The developers have a really cool product, but they don't have any good way to talk about it. They don't know how to sell it, and they don't know, what the actual business model is. And the business people have, this great vision and this grand idea, but they have no way to actually go about executing it. So I think, the designers are the creative people really in the room that can breathe life into these ideas and help with the storytelling and the communication. It's a learning process in itself, and that's really what we set up at Startup Weekends, is that ability for people to, you have to learn it the hard way. There's really no other way to, we can kind of get up there and tell people a lot of these statistics, but once they go through 54 hours and they see the teams that are getting, first and second place and creating really amazing things, everybody, it's very, very clear that the people doing that have the diversity of the team.
I want to make one footnote, guys. What you just described there, diversity in teams, is a large part of the reason we're doing this course online. We have, I think 50 countries represented in this course. My guess is, 100 languages spoken. We have bankers, we have designers, we have artists, we have teachers, we have business owners, and, just allowing people globally, as you guys described on your slide on complexity and information, to connect with this diversity is a big reason, so I'm glad you guys touched on that.
Yeah, it's important, and I think that that's diversity in skill sets, as well as gender, as well as religion and culture and everything else. I think everything is extremely important.
Yeah.
One of the more, I guess, impactful stories we have is in Tel Aviv. We put together a big effort to actually bring in and escort 20 Palestinians into the Peres Center for Peace in Israel, and it was kind of a big deal getting everybody in, but as soon as you put everybody in a room and start talking about ideas and problems that people are passionate about, all of those cultural, boundaries, sociopolitical boundaries, they disappear completely in the face of entrepreneurship. We've got a few minutes here, so let's kind of jump ahead. Do you want to jump on this one, Frank?
Sure.
Slide 10 here.
Yeah, we can do that. Real quick also about the teams. There's right now, you have like all these data we have and all these things we observe. We don't observe it yet, and we don't really gather all these data yet, because you have to see it's a lot of work. We're pretty soon, so stay tuned. We'll get there. But what's interesting also is to look at the existing studies. There's a couple of them who actually measured that and measured the impact of diversity on teams. And these have been measured as a valuable asset to get creativity. So just as a note. I just wanted to go back to maybe a general theme, which is so isn't that a paradox that we don't know anything about entrepreneurship, but we're still here and talking about it? How can we address that? And going back to what is Startup Weekend, we're trying to provide experiential education. Startup Weekend is, if anything, is a simulator. And if you succeed in that simulator, you will succeed in real life because there's no differences. I kind of get back to what I said before. If you go on slide 11, like, this is actually a book. It's 100 years old, roughly, but it came from the Harvard Library. That's what people were learning at that time, like the science of getting rich. It's a great book, but I think it tells you you have to follow your, I can't remember what it says, like, follow the truth. I don't know, what's something about that was kind of the equivalent of the lean at the time or whatever it was. Like this is a very old thing. Like, people always wanted to be better at doing entrepreneurship. What I like to put in perspective is if you go on slide 12, if you look at the game of chess, and I like to see entrepreneurship like a game, and if you look at the number of combination of game you can play at chess, having 10 to the power of 123 games, and that's an 8x8 board with less than 20 moves and two players. And that's more for information, but the number of atoms in the known universe. So that gives you a perspective, like that's a very simple game of chess. And if you look at business and entrepreneurship, it's a 7 billion people game with tons of rules, most of them unknown. And so I like to think about it, like if you try to create a business, it's kind of the same cheering for the Hunger Games. But the real question is how can we explain the people to be a better entrepreneur in such a complex world? And really the only way you can do it is by doing it, by trying, by failing, by analyzing what's wrong. And so we go back to actually what Lynn is saying, which is good, which is observe, you know, analyze and learn from that. If you go to the next slide on slide number 13, I'm kind of talking about the entrepreneur's dilemma, and I quoted a Nobel Prize in economy, and what he's saying is highly interesting. What he says is whatever you do as an entrepreneur roughly is going to be making decisions based on the amount of information you have, of the amount of time you have, and the limitation of your knowledge and your brain ultimately. So you make something which is rational at one point, and you're going to make one rational decision after the other, but at the end, if you look back, like, your decision may be totally irrational because you didn't know that this product will fail or you didn't know that this event will happen. So what's interesting is to think about it that way, I think, is how the only thing that makes this decision, the only thing that makes you becoming a better entrepreneur is actually having a better brain. I know it looks cheesy, but there's a lot of information out there that is really hard to put in a book because everybody has a different story. Everybody has a different environment, everybody has different products, and everything is moving very fast. Again, it's like a game of chess. Like, depending which position you are, there's no universal way to win a game of chess because it's also competition. You're competing against other people. Strategy was analyzing that, like if you look at Porter and all these publications. So to be very modest and to be very humble, to the people who listen to us right now, I would say whatever you have as an assumption right now, just try it. Just go out there, execute your idea. Worst case scenario, you fail. You can secure that. You can think about it in terms of how much money do you want to put into this? How can I try to make that happen? Go to a Startup Weekend. Go to the events around you. But the only way you're going to make this brain getting better at becoming an entrepreneur is actually doing it. And trying to have excuses not to execute something. That's what I call being an entrepreneur in denial. You have to go out there. There's no excuse for it. You can execute something in 1 hour of your time or in 1 weekend. And I think that's the opportunity for us all here to learn more about entrepreneurship. And the other one is, like, try to surround yourself with good people, like people who've been successful entrepreneurs or people who've been through that thing. And the one who are not, like, Mark can mention that. Like, we used to say that mentors are like mushrooms. There's the good one and the toxic ones. choose wisely, and at the end, you're again, like, nobody can predict or say what you should do, but it's always better to talk to people who've been through that, through these experiences, who are like one or two steps ahead of you.
I think, you know, how do we maximize our experience? It's obviously talking to people who have gone through this and understand it before, but, you know, I think one thing we've seen and heard time and time again, there's just as many mentors who have self-proclaimed mentors who have helped kill companies as have helped them. And what it comes down to is what is in your brain, you know, the previous kind of conversation here. And
Did we lose you for a second, Mark? It sounds like they might have cut out for a minute, but I think those were two key points they were making, points that we're trying to make here in class. One is to take action. You have to take action, and that's something that we've seen before. You know, they mentioned previous research. There's a lot of research in entrepreneurship about the process that entrepreneurs go through, and the successful entrepreneurs take action early. That's in contrast to a lot of others who never start, where they just do something like write a business plan or do some research or look around. They don't actually take action. So the first thing was take action. The second thing that we're trying to do here is surround yourself with great people. And that's the other thing that we're working on here in entrepreneurship and globalization as part of the Shoka U, is getting people together, working really hard, learning from one another, and that's what we're doing with Booknito and we're doing online. So it looks like they've cut out. That's probably a cell phone issue out there on the west coast of the United States in Seattle. But Michael and I are still on here, and I thought it was really interesting the comment they said about mentors. Mentors can be like different types of mushrooms. They can be really tasty and yummy and make you think great things, or they can be poisonous and make you really sick, and you've got to be careful. And I think one of the things to counteract that, and I'd be interested to hear their thoughts if they can get back online with us, Michael, is that maybe you should have multiple mentors, and maybe that helps you determine which are the toxic and which are the really beneficial mentors. Michael, how are they looking? Are they calling back in on our switchboard?
I don't see them on the switchboard yet. I'm getting in touch, so we'll see if we can pull them back in for
right.
five or six minutes.
And I don't want to do the rest of their slides because it's not our slideshow. But one other point I think that they made that was really interesting, where they were talking about there is no exact answer, that you've got to keep learning and keep trying things. You know, one of the analogies we like to use when we're talking about successful entrepreneurship is, at least in the United States, they mentioned there's 600,000 new ventures created each year. And that engages about 2.5 million people, because a lot of ventures that we discussed are created by teams. So that's about 2.5 million people a year in the United States starting some kind of new venture. That is roughly the same number as the number of people who start a marriage each year in the United States. And the question becomes, do we have the right formula for a marriage? If I said to you, what's the great way to have a successful marriage, could you tell me A, B, or C? No, it's different for every couple. It's different for every family, just like they were making the point that a startup is different for each entrepreneur, what they know, what the team knows, how they're going to go about business. We're just waiting to see if we can get them back here. Any word yet, Michael, on the switchboard?
Hey, guys,
are you guys back on?
Yeah. Sorry, we were...
Excellent. So, we were just filling air, waiting for you guys to come back. So, the mic is yours.
I love the wedding, the marriage analogy. I think it's really good.
Yes, I took that out of, you know, the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor. They made that comparison a couple years ago, that the same number of people were working on new ventures as were starting new marriages. And it is obvious in both cases that there is no exact strategy to do it right.
Just real quick, but I don't know if you guys saw the TED. There was a TED talk, and they were mentioning this very interesting thing. And I think that addressed also how can statistics actually help entrepreneurship. And I think it's going to be pointless. Like the thing she was telling was, people are naturally very optimistic, because I can't remember how many people divorce in the United States every year, but I can't remember a number. Let's assume it's like 60%. I think it was something like that. But if I tell the people who are going to get married, do you think you're going to get divorced? 100% of them said no. And I think it's kind of the same here. Is that's also part of, you know, what's an entrepreneur. If I tell you, you know what, like in the United States, 76% of the business are one people business, and something like 96% make less than $1 million. But I hope that everybody who's listening to us right now say, these guys are idiots. I'm going to be Facebook. It's part of a game. It's exactly like the winning is actually a perfect analogy. Okay. So I hope all of you guys will have happy weddings with your co-founders.
Mark, Frank, I got a question for you guys. In our course, you know, with, you know, a bunch of young and next generation entrepreneurs and, well, some older entrepreneurs, how can we simulate what you guys have done so well around the world? I mean, you guys do this in 54 hours, and we have 8 weeks to do this. You know, you were kind of ending on a slide, take action. And I think, you know, this is kind of where you're going. What can we do, and what can, you know, the students do in this course?
Yeah, in the context of a course, that's actually a big problem that we're starting to address. We've launched University Vertical. It's more of just an intentional approach about how are we starting to view Startup Weekend as a great catalyst to the right kind of conversations and topics that should be, you know, really valuable to you guys, which, you know, you ultimately end up covering a lot of these. Our view has actually been starting with a Startup Weekend that would happen kind of at the beginning, very beginning of a course, but, you know, just with the students that would be involved in the course, then go through the 8 weeks and kind of develop that tool chest, you know, understand the methodologies such as Lean throughout the 8 weeks, and then actually kind of disband and, you know, through the model of experiential learning itself, you know, you go out, you do it, you step back, you learn from what you did, and you dissect it for 8 weeks, and then you go back out and you do it again, but from a completely fresh start, and you do it within a given community, so you're really maximizing the serendipity and taking it outside of just the people in the classroom, too. So that's kind of just one approach that we're taking, and, you know, more than happy to always help you guys, put one of these together or help you all find one to go attend.
Yeah, that's more of a brainstorm, and you see, I'm not sure if I would agree with Mark's, like, way to do it. I think, that's part of it. Like, we love to disagree sometimes and debate all these things, but if you guys have 8 weeks, it's 56 days, so I would do, like, 15 Startup Weekend in a row, and as long as the team can survive, stay, and the one who can't survive, like, should just go again and reform teams as much as they can until, like, most of everybody graduates with, I don't know, some funding or a bootstrap company. Like, keep trying again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Like, that would be what I would try. If you have 8 weeks, that's awesome. You can make a lot of Startup Weekend.
Awesome.
And you'll need a lot of coffee, I guess.
Well, as we have 3 minutes, do you guys want to close on any topic in particular?
Do you have any questions, like, coming from?
Yeah, we have some questions on Twitter, that's for sure.
Let's
take one question. There's one right here. How do you make sure you don't lose credibility with customers when you put out a Lean product with bugs or issues? Do you guys see any of this? You know, some of the videos I think we watched,
yeah,
all of them kind of going out and, you know, talking to customers. How don't you lose credibility when you do that? And that's from CJ.
I think, you know, testing and making sure, how do you not lose credibility? I think that's making sure your customers know what stage you're at. So it's a little bit of expectation setting. And I think putting them in the shoes of being part of that creation process with you, you'll actually end up getting a lot of feedback if you engage people and make sure that they understand that they're, you know, there to help you as early adopters of this product. Mm-hmm. So if you're positioning as in promising them the world, and, you know, under-delivering, that's very different than saying, hey, I've got something, I think I'm solving a problem, you're interested, you know, let's go on this journey together.
Yeah, I think it depends also on your product. Like, if you have a B2B business and you have a $1 million product and 3 customers, you definitely don't want to react the same
very
way that if you have, like, 7 million customers. And if you have a lot of customers and it's a B2C, then I think Eric's methodology of doing A-B testing and cohorts, you know, worst-case scenario, you will lose, like, 5 customers. But you would have learned a lot through that process. So it's really, again, like, I don't think there's a universal way, but if you ask me, like, how to do it, it would depend on your business.
And people are forgiving.
Yeah.
And I think more than people
are forgiving. How do you guys force people to get out of the building, to quote Steve Blank?
Yeah, actually, like, during Startup Weekends, that's a big part of it. When we have 3 judging criteria, and one of them is, you know, what customer validation do you have? And literally, we just force people to get up and get out of the building, whether that's to,
loud music, something like that.
It's very logical to go around and kind of smack people and, you know, ask them the questions. And, you know, there's always assumptions in any young idea, and helping identify those assumptions. And whether it's going out on the street and having a sign or coming up with some gimmick to get people to talk to you or, you know, hopping on the phone and you know, leveraging your networks. Or
Mark and Frank, this has been most enjoyable. The students have gotten a lot of this. We've gotten a lot out of this. Thank you guys so much for taking an hour of your time and calling in, putting the presentation together. I want to say before we go, let's get a virtual applause on Twitter for these guys.
And guys, make sure you get out there, get to a startup weekend. We got about 5 seconds. Get online in a few minutes. Ashoka is going to be managing our Twitter chat. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you in a couple days. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, dude. Perfect. Are you guys still there?
We're live.
We're live, but the show's over.
Okay, yep.